Welcome to Small Business Big Network, the podcast for small business owners who want big results from their networking. I'm Liz Drury, a freelance voiceover artist who knows that if you're not working, then networking could help. Louise Chandler is a marketing and communications expert and the founder of Soundbite Media. She says she's still friends with people that she networked with years ago, and she likes to challenge herself at networking meetings by talking to the people who she thinks probably don't want to talk to her. Thank you very much for being my guest on the podcast today, Louise.
You're welcome. Thank you, Liz, for inviting me. I'm excited. I'm excited for us to have a chat about the Small Business Big Network, huh?
Yeah, me too. So you're a marketing and communications expert, and I know you've done that for quite a while, but let's have a little dig into your background. What did you want to be when you were at school? Can you remember?
Oh my goodness, I really can. And not only can I remember, but I think I've got certain bits of evidence as well. I came across some old school reports and things recently. So I had quite a few ambitions that were quite far ranging. Mm. At one point, I wanted to own a sweet shop.
Oh, that's every kid's dream, isn't it?
Absolutely, because then you can feast whenever you like. And it's a good thing I didn't do it, to be honest, because I think I'd have no teeth and also would just have indulged myself far too much. So that was one of my earliest memories. Then I remember doing a project at school which was really about history and hieroglyphics. Mm. And I wanted to be an archaeologist.
Yeah.
And I remember my mum buying a book about it, like a kid's version about archaeology. And I've still got the book, actually, so it's quite funny to read the notes and things I've written into it when I was like 10.
Yeah.
And then from there, complete change of plan. After watching lots of TV and going to lots of different exhibitions, I wanted to be a fashion designer. Mm. And we used to watch a TV show in the late 80s called Fashion TV. It was like an American program.
Yeah.
And it just made me want to create clothes.
Yeah.
And then I realized I was rubbish at drawing design, so actually let's scrub that. And then from sweet shop owner to archaeologist to fashion designer, and then from there, from about my mid-teens to my teenage years, I discovered the media and was like, oh, I want to work in the media. I want to be a journalist. And that was the one that then stuck with me. Yeah. And I explored it even more.
Yeah. So what steps did you take after finishing school? Where did you go next?
I think I was well aware that being at the time, especially the BBC, to work for a broadcasting company like that or ITV or Channel 4, you had to have connections. Mm-hmm. I'm the youngest of six kids. I come from a single parent family. My dad passed when I was a baby. Mm-hmm. And also I'm of West Indian heritage. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have those connections.
Yeah.
When I was growing up looking at the media and aspiring to be a journalist and reporter, there was no one that looked like me really on TV apart from Trevor McDonald, who everyone loved.
He doesn't look much like you, I have to say.
No, not quite. Similar skin colour, but that's where it ends. Yeah, the similarities. So I knew really I was going to have to work hard and just start making some contacts. And that's what I set about doing. One of my first experiences was I was walking through my high street and there was a local radio station setting up as a brand new broadcast service.
Yeah.
And long story cut short, I just went up to them and said, look, do you need volunteers? And they said, yeah, we do, actually. So that was the first time I actually stepped into a radio studio to go and produce and research and make tea. And I fell in love with media from there, especially radio. I'm a big radio geek, and conversations and discussions and debates. But really, it was a case of me setting out to research and find opportunities and network in addition to studying. Went to uni, did my degree, then did a postgrad. And every summer, Christmas and Easter, I would get a work experience placement where I could put what I was learning at uni into practice. That led to my first job, paid gigs in the media industry, really. So, yeah, it was a case of knowing what I wanted, being very clear about who to speak to, lots of letters. I've still got a lot of the rejection letters that I keep. Some of them only have one line in it, so it really wasn't worth the stamp, truth be told. But at least the courtesy was they told me they didn't want me. It was a lot of writing away to media companies, applying, asking, phone calls, emails, and just really knocking on those doors for opportunities. Until I got the paid gig.
Yeah, well, that just shows you the power of A, volunteering,
and B, networking, doesn't it? That you got to where you wanted to be by doing both of those things.
It's true, and passion as well. I was really passionate. I remember when I was doing my postgrad, I was juggling three things: the full-time study, because I did the postgrads in radio journalism and broadcasting, so I did it in a year, doing that intense for a year while paid work, because obviously you need to earn money for while you're studying. So I was studying full-time, working in an admin job for like an insurance company, and doing free radio gigs as and when they came up, just to network and use my experience. And that was a really intense, busy time, but what kept me going was the fact I loved it. I loved making programs, I loved meeting new people and telling and sharing their stories. So any opportunity to do that, you could have sent me off to, you know, a far-flung part of the country. If there was an opportunity, I was there.
So tell us about some of the companies that you work for and the kind of radio that you were producing and presenting.
So my first foot into the industry in radio terms was the BBC. I'd done a lot of work placements for them during my student years. And then when paid work came up and I was qualified, sure, I got the gigs with them. Mm. And that was really a lot of studio production, producing studio programmes, researching, editing a lot of audio. And then I would go out and do outside broadcasts, which were brilliant, because you have, at the time, you had like a people carrier that was all kitted up, and you'd go and you'd raise the mast and you broadcast from, you know, a marathon or what have you. I remember covering a bomb scare that was really scary at Gatwick. I remember having to call my mum and tell her I was on the way to it to report and have my next of kin. She was going to have to know where I was. I then started to get involved as well with commercial projects. So writing advertising for brands such as cereal brands and sweets and chocolates. So that was quite interesting because it was a different style of broadcasting, writing adverts and working on commercial projects with the likes of some banks like HSBC, also working with retailers like IKEA on their retail radio and media services. So it was quite far ranging and I juggled a lot. And then I then got into community broadcasting with the BBC, where I was making programmes for the African and Caribbean community. Lots of links with the islands, reporting on stories that affected the diaspora communities here and also on the islands. So, yeah, it was a real mixture of reporting, live, pre-recorded, I made a couple of radio documentaries as well. One was about the Rindrush generation. So yeah, quite a mix over the 10 years that I was at the Beeb.
And are you still doing some radio work now?
I do, not as much. The industry's changed a great deal, I think it's fair to say. You'll know and understand that, Liz, that it's shrunk. A lot of the kind of media and radio companies now have either disappeared, dissolved, or been gobbled up by others. So it means that the opportunities aren't as far and wide. But I still love radio. I do still do some radio shows. And I call, when I'm in the studio, I call it my happy place, really. Because I'm playing songs, I'm chatting, and people say, how was work? I'm like, what? That wasn't work. That really wasn't work. It was. Maybe it's because I've done it for a long time, but I also still challenge myself in terms of my craft and making sure that I'm still, you know, doing quality shows. Because it's easy when you've done something for a long time to get complacent. But I also see it as a privilege as well. It's, you know, my 18-year-old self would be very proud and chuffed that I'm still getting to work in the industry 20 plus years later. And I don't take that for granted and undervalue that, because it's not easy.
So when did you decide to set up your own business, and why did you decide to take that step?
So it really came at a point where I would, predominantly in my time at the BBC, I was radio. And then within the Beeb, you have something that they call attachments. So it's like a secondment where you go and work in another department. Went off, did TV, which was a shock because, you know, it's a different style of telling stories and you have to brush your hair when you're on TV. No one, you know, because people actually see you, for goodness sake. So yeah, I went into it. I mean, I was producing programs behind the scenes, but also did on air as well and did live pre-recorded pieces to camera. And when I then went off to this department doing TV and I came back to radio, it was a credit crunch. The BBC had to make some cuts. Yeah. They put many of us on 0-hour contracts or very minimum, mm-hmm. minimal hours. So I think I went from having a full-time contract to 7 hours.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, now what do I do? And everywhere was the same. I was networking, I was, again, trying to find those contracts. And they were few and far between. And I was getting a bit of work here and there, but not enough. Mm-hmm. And it was actually a really uncertain and distressing time because I thought, well, I've got all these skills. What do I do with them? So around the time, at this point, I've worked for the BBC for about 10 years. And all my contacts that I know who run events, who write books, who are thought leaders, were coming to me with their stories saying, can you come and report? Can you interview us? And I would honestly say, look, I've got to be honest. You know, I'm not doing a great deal at the moment, so you're not going to get the coverage that you want. And from that evolved the idea of, well, why don't you come and work with us? Help us get the coverage. So I went from being the person who was on air creating the interviews and the content to actually coaching clients and flipping my skills around to actually tell them, well, look, if you want to get coverage for this book that you've written or for this event, this is where you go. This is how you do it. This is how you do a media interview, because that's what I've been doing for 10 years or more. Yeah. So that's what led me to start up my own business, really. It was still having a love and a passion for the industry and finding a way to make my skills match and plug in a way that was helpful and productive and constructive. And I'll be honest, from the outset, I didn't grow up thinking I was going to be an entrepreneur or run my own business. Yeah. That was never my, you know, as I said before, I wanted to own a sweet shop, so or, you know, be an archaeologist. So I never imagined I would run my own. So I think I'll be honest and say it was more out of circumstance rather than something that I set out to do. But what I did find is when I decided it was something I really wanted to embark on, I went to the Prince's Trust. They were brilliant. They gave me a mentor who was meant to mentor me for 2 years. He mentored me for 10. He was incredible. So that set me off on that journey of combining my skills and expertise to then use them in a different way in a business sense.
So who is it that you help? What kind of businesses is it? Do you find it's in any particular sector or not really?
I've really worked with a range of sectors when I think about it. Education, retail, I worked with Superdrug for 6 years, for example. I've worked with a couple of tech clients, but things evolve over time. No, nothing stands still. Mm-hmm. And what you tend to find in the industry is I find that there's certain people who demand or need more of your help and expertise than others. Over the board, everyone will always need communications and media and marketing advice. But in my interactions, I find that sometimes there's a bit more demand from some industries. So at the moment, in the last year or two, I found that I'm working a lot more with thought leaders, people who are like career consultants. They've got a really good set of skills and knowledge and expertise. They're just looking for a way of how they position and share it and get their messages out there. And I think ultimately that's where someone like me comes in. And it could be someone who is an expert in, I don't know, local government. It could be someone who's an expert in equality, diversity and inclusion. They all have the same desire to raise their profile and to talk more about who they are and what they do. And that's how, so yeah, it's more of a, before it's been small companies or bigger companies in the guise of Superdrug, whereas in this instance, recently, it's been more of the individual.
And so what do you do for your clients? How does Soundbite Media help them?
I think really it's a case of, it's quite a multi-layered approach and every client's different, but in essence, I would say it's a mixture of PR, communications and marketing. And some people would argue and say, well, they're all the same thing, aren't they? And it's like, not quite. They've got their nuances. They definitely have their crossover periods as well and phases. For the PR element, it's more about reputation and brand building. So I have clients who come to me who are looking for advice around that. For communications, it's really looking at their storytelling, their blogs, and also what they say and how they say it. And that could be in person, but also in all of their comms that they put out to the world and even internally as well. And then in marketing sense, I will work with clients on paid advertising. So I spend a lot of time wearing my glasses, building adverts on Facebook and Meta and Google, looking at newsletter strategy, social media strategy, because that's what marketing entails. So it's really looking at the key objectives of what the client needs and then matching that to PR, communications and marketing. Sometimes it's all three. Sometimes it's individual facets. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it will just be one. It all depends on what they want to achieve and what is the best way we can do that.
Yeah. And so what kind of difference has working with you made to your clients? What kind of successes have they had?
Well, it's interesting because on my website, there's a tagline on the homepage that say, I'm your brand's best ally. And I actually took that. It was quite funny. I was a bit like, oh, can I use that? Because it sounds, you know, I'm used to inflating other people's egos, not my own. But I actually got that quote from a testimonial from one of my clients recently. She actually said that in a very long, lovely, glowing testimonial where she spoke about the difference I've made to her work as a thought leader and how I was her brand's best ally. And I think for me, often it's spotting the gaps that people don't notice. So in her instance, she had written a whole range of online courses, which were brilliant in terms of content and what she was saying. But I was able to look at her customer journey on her website with a fresh pair of eyes and spot all the different things in her communications and marketing that she was missing.
Yeah.
That increased her sales by 25%.
Wow.
So I'm not a web designer. I'm not someone like that. But equally, by me coming to her and saying, well, actually, when people buy a course, you haven't told them this, or you haven't led them here, or what about the navigation, or what about putting that piece of information in at this point and communicating that externally. It was all these types of things that we were able to achieve. So with that one client alone, she gave me that tagline, I'm your brand's best ally, which I thought was lovely, and that's why it's now on my website.
So have you got any tips you can share along the sort of PR and marketing lines for small business owners that maybe can't work with somebody like you and are trying to do it all themselves?
Yes, certainly. And I would certainly say there's a lot out there for free. Don't get me wrong. Yes, there's times when you need to spend money on certain functionality or software, but there is a ton out there for free that really allows you to experiment. And I think my first tip I would give is don't be afraid. A lot of the times people are fearful about trying things out. I speak to a lot of clients, and also I do a lot of business advisor work where I am assigned a particular business who is starting out in the first 6 months to a year. And we talk a lot about their brand and what they want to do. And there's a lot of fear. Mm. And my advice to them is, do you know where the delete button is on some of these platforms? And they say, yeah. I said, well, great. Because if you put something and publish something and you're not happy with it, if you know how to amend or even delete it, even better. Do not worry.
Yeah.
Because you have everyone start somewhere. The most successful companies, I love reading books and articles and watching podcasts and listening to podcasts about brands and business stories of where people started.
Mm.
Because I'm amazed at how literally people are about to go bust before they made it big. Or, you know, everyone's got to start from somewhere. So do start. And when you do start, it's all about, for me, just spending some time planning. In our day-to-day lives, we are so busy with paying bills, looking after ourselves, our family, going grocery shopping, everything, eat, sleeping, and everything in between. Everything can feel so rushed. But I always say to people that I work with and people that, you know, I may not be working with, take your time to plan. Mm. Sit down and really work out a few things. Firstly, consider, what is your objective? Are you trying to drive more clicks to your website, for example? Are you trying to build a new community of loyal customers? Really have a think of your objective is the first thing. Secondly, think about who you're talking to, your audience. Who do you want to promote this product or service to? And really see what you can find out about them. And I'm always amazed. People have the answers more than they realise. Or there's a way of finding out. There's lots of databases and research out there for you to find out more about your ideal customer. So the first thing is you've looked at your objective. Secondly, you're looking at who you're talking to, your audience. Third thing for me is just exploring some platforms and channels where you can get your message out there. Do a bit of planning to really look at, is social media the right avenues for you? And even if it is, yes, you've got a profile, but maybe you'd be better off building a Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you'd be better on LinkedIn or Snapchat, you know, depending on where your audience is.
Yeah.
So, or it might not even be social media. It could be going to networking events or could be webinars and networking. Just find the platforms and channels that work for you and don't feel you have to do everything instantly.
Yeah.
Because there is that temptation of, I've got to do it all now.
Yes.
You haven't. Just do one or two well and consistently to see and measure results.
Yeah.
Once you've looked at your objective, looked at your audience, looked at your platforms and channels. Once you've done that, after a period of time, you can then say, actually, I'm going to introduce something else, or I'm going to stick with what I've got because I'm getting good results. But just do start and take that time.
Yeah. Well, I think that brings us nicely onto talking a bit more about networking. So how do you like to network for your business?
Do you know, it's funny, before COVID, we all talk about before COVID, goodness, what a, seems like a different world then. I would do all the events, networking events are in person. I am not a morning person, Liz. I am groggy in the morning, but a lot of them were breakfast meetings and I would challenge myself to go and show up, and, you know, be presentable and be ready to talk. And what I found was quite interesting with in-person networking is you could always tell the people who knew each other and the people who didn't, people kind of on the fringe. It was a real lesson in, I think, people psychology. And I think I learned a lot by throwing myself into the deep end. And dare I say, even going up to people who probably didn't want to talk to me, and they were the ones that I would pick because I thought, actually, it's going to be a good challenge for me. Fast forward, obviously, to now, we're more hybrid, we're more online. And I do really like doing online networking because you don't have to worry about logistics. If you're not an early morning person, you know, you're logging on rather than getting in your car and driving somewhere. So I think there's perks, you know, there's pros and cons to networking in person and virtually. At the moment, I have found myself doing more virtual networking, and I'm actually trying to put some time in my diary from autumn to go and do more in-person sessions. Summer months, people are away and a lot of networking groups pause. So I really want to challenge myself to get back out there again in person, in real life, from the autumn months, because I think it's important to keep yourself rehearsed and talking to people, building a rapport, being really articulate in terms of who you are and what you do, and listening as well, not just doing all the talking, listening to what others say, absorbing that, sharing information that's useful as well where you can.
That's
what I really enjoy about networking as well, coming away with some nuggets where I've helped others and equally they've helped me.
I think it is a very different experience, you know, networking online and in person. How far afield would you go for an in-person networking event?
Interesting. I'll drive anywhere, but I think when I really look at how I want to be intentional with my time, I would give myself really a half an hour to 45 minute radius, because you might get stuck in traffic. And if you take, for example, an hour out of your day to drive to an event, and then you're at the event, say, for 2 hours, and then an hour back, that's half of your day gone. And what I found before COVID, when I was doing a lot of in-person networking events, it did eat up a lot of my time. So I think from stepping back and doing more virtually, it's allowed me to kind of review it and see the perks and the cons, but also to really be intentional with my time and how far I would travel.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do it, but I think it's also about the session. If it's just an chat over a coffee, okay. But if it's more of a session where you're going to learn, there's guest speakers, if it's a fuller event, for me, that's worth getting in my car and driving half an hour or an hour for it.
Yeah. Is networking something that you've always done, and have you always enjoyed it?
Yes, I have. And it's funny, I think even before I stepped into the business world, I was networking before I kind of officially realized it was that when I was working in the media industry, because that's a lot of where your work comes from. It's from getting to know people and they recommend you for work and vice versa. So I think I was networking really before I started in business in the media industry. And then when I started doing it when running my own business, I realized how valuable a skill it was. And also how much I still have to learn as well. It's not something that you can ever say, oh, I'm perfect at it and that's it, because networking involves people and personalities, and you're going to come up across people that you get on well with and you naturally bond with, and people that you probably don't, and that's fine. Not everyone's for everyone, right? What I will say is there are people that I networked and met a long time ago who we are still connected and friends to this day. So it's something that I think I like to still, that's why I was saying it's important for me to, as much as it's great to network virtually, also in person, because it's a skill that I think you have to still hone and still be really good at. But yes, I think ultimately I do enjoy it. I enjoy listening. I enjoy learning. I enjoy sharing. It is quite daunting sometimes. I think for me, to kind of give myself a little bit of boost of confidence, I like to wear my favourite colour, which is pink. So once I'm wearing my pink outfit, I know I'm good to go. And also, you just have to remember everyone's human. Everyone is nervous or, you know, trying to do their best. So it's not something that comes easy to all of us.
That's
fine.
Yeah. So one final question then, Louise. If anybody wants to know more about you or Soundbite Media, what is the best place for them to find you?
I would always say start with my website. I write blogs on there often, so they're there as resources for you to read and use and find useful and comment and share and try the tips and ideas that I share. So that's soundbitemedia.co.uk. And on there, you'll be able to read a bit more about me, but as I say, find out more about some tips and practical ideas that could help you. And also during... Sorry, did that come out on your recording?
It just cut out.
Ah, that's because a reminder came up. Hang on. That's why. I'll start that again.
Yeah.
Right, I'll go from... Okay. Also, when you go onto the website, you'll see that during COVID, I spent the time writing toolkits and practical guides that help people to write a press release or launch a podcast, or a particular toolkit I wrote about creating an event and running an event. And I think for me, it's just distilling all of my knowledge into a really handy, interactive toolkit that you can make notes on and learn. So all of that's on the website, which is soundbitemedia.co.uk.
Brilliant. That sounds like a fantastic resource, and I recommend everybody goes check that out.
Thanks for listening to Small Business Big Network. If you found this podcast useful, please do rate, review and subscribe. And don't forget to share it with the rest of your network too.